you could be watching TV and an AI could create a whole film for you that day based on what you were feeling, you know, from start to finish. And then you watch this film, it's like, oh, it knows you so well, it's exactly what you're looking for, and then you share it with your friends. I think that's definitely a reality that could occur 100%.
G'day and welcome to another episode of the Andrew Price Podcast, the podcast for serious artists. I'm thrilled to be talking with Finian McManus. I interviewed him about 5 years ago when I was in LA doing the interview series, and I always love talking to him because he has just a great way of putting things. So he's, I guess he started as a concept artist and has transitioned to founder of his studio, Terraform Studios, which now employs 50 concept artists for basically all the large IP you can think of. Their studio is the idea factory that a lot of movies and game studios go to. So when they need character costumes, worlds built, they're the ones that are doing it, right? And then it's the 3D artists who are then, you know, forming the mesh and putting that into the movie or game, right? But it's that idea, the design, that is so important nowadays. And we talk all about that. What is good design? How do you learn good design when it's subjective, right? We talk all about that. And we also talk at length about, of course, the topic of the day, AI, right? With Midjourney, with Dolly, Disco Diffusion, all these tools coming out that can seemingly create amazing concept art with some prompts. Where does that leave, for example, his studio and concept artists at large? Is it going to replace artists' jobs? We talk about that at length. There is a big debate in the industry, and you've probably read a lot of stuff on Facebook, and people have got conflicting ideas and thoughts about what this means for art. A lot of people freaked out, a lot of others that aren't. So we talk about why Finian is actually not freaking out. So we actually start right in the middle of a conversation just talking about Terraform. So here is the conversation with Finian.
Terraform for the last 2 years has been the main thing I focus on. Even though I do concept art and I'm a creative director for the studio.
Yeah.
You know, we have around 50 designers now, so we're pumping out all sorts of stuff. Yeah, it's gotten quite large.
50.
Wow. Yeah.
Are they all in LA or some remote?
No, they're all over the place. I mean, we have a good chunk of our management in LA, so we have 7 art directors. I believe 3 of them are in LA. One of them just moved to Reno. Mm. And then other art directors are kind of scattered, you know, some in Paris and in Spain as well. But then the artists are all over the place. So there's some in the US, some, and many are international.
Okay. Yeah. I see. Got it.
Yeah. We haven't been able to release much yet, but I checked and we have over 10,000 paintings that we've done that have yet to be released. So, really? Yeah, so we have Obi-Wan Kenobi is coming out this year. It already came out, so we have a lot of stuff for that.
When can you release that stuff, by the way? Do you have to get clearance?
You know, yeah, I really have no idea at this point. It's hard to tell. It's kind of just like someone that did art releases it, and then everybody else sees that they released it, and then it's just a wave. So
is that how it goes? It's out.
I mean, there's no point of contact. I really have no idea because in film, you know, after the film is released, the crews just kind of disperse and move on to other things.
But so, like once it's released, does that give you clearance?
You don't really know.
Oh, really? Oh,
ambiguous. My God. It's very ambiguous. Yeah. Oh. You hope so, but you really don't know. Yeah.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. No point of contact. So it's kind of like, what is it, like penguins on the edge of the iceberg, and like nobody wants to be the first one to dive in to check there's a colorway.
Exactly. No, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who also worked on it, and I was like, no, you post first. Yeah, seeing if we could get someone to actually put something up there, test the waters and see if it was okay.
Really? Has any like artist that you know of like been like... reprimanded for posting things?
Oh, I have, personally.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Almost everybody I know has. I released some Star Wars stuff like two years ago probably, that I thought was okay to release because the game had been out for a long time. And almost immediately I got emails about it telling me to take it down. almost immediately.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. And it was already out.
It was already out for a while. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Why? What's the... Yeah. Just...
Oh, I mean, dude, I mean, I've only released like 10, 20% of all the work I've ever done. That's just normal. It's just how the industry works.
Yeah.
You just hope that you're able to release it one day, and then hopefully it's long enough ago that no one cares or is looking for it so that you could just upload it, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
So that's why you see stuff on ArtStation where it's like, yeah, like, why are you posting that now? Like, that came out 2 years ago. Like, why didn't you post it earlier to the release? Oh, yeah, that's why,
because people are worried. They just don't know. Because the issue is if you post it and you get asked to take it down, you're never going to be able to post it. But if you wait long enough that people don't really care anymore, then most likely you're going to be able to keep it there.
Ah, I see. Yeah. Got it. So once it's like basically out of the limelight of the crews still working on it, perhaps.
Usually that's the best time. Yeah. Right. So probably like at least a couple months after everything's wrapped and done and, you know.
Right. And when you see those huge like art dumps on ArtStation where it's like the new game came out and suddenly everybody's posting it. Basically,
those are coordinated. Three artists did
it. Oh, they're coordinated.
They're coordinated. So those are different. Those are set up by companies who contact ArtStation already with the permission to do it. And in games, it's a lot simpler than in film and TV, because games, you can actually contact the company and talk about it with them and get clearance. With film, a lot of the time... Well, it's an ongoing like studio. With film, a lot of the time, basically how it works is for every new production, a new LLC is created that employs everybody. That's a temporary LLC. And then after the film or TV is done, that LLC gets dissolved and everybody is out working on different things. So they're no longer attached to the film production studio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. That explains a lot, actually.
I'm glad you informed me how
that works. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. But anyways, we'll be able to release a lot of stuff soon, thankfully. And I'm really excited to finally show, you know, a lot of the stuff we've been doing, because... You know, that is my daily thing. It's like, you know, we have like 24 ongoing projects and it's just like giving creative direction on them, making sure they're all going well, making sure the artists have what they need to really do great work, you know, checking in with the art directors and ensuring that we like give really good design solutions.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Got it. So Terraform, would you say is, by the way, we're rolling now. This is the start of the interview. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. No, that's good.
Here we are with Finian. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terraform is, when did you found it and when, and what do you specialize in?
Yeah. So I started the studio just about 2 years ago. At the beginning of it all, it wasn't actually my intention to create a full concept design studio. A director I had worked with in the past was making a new film that's actually just shooting now, so I can't really talk about it yet. And he wanted me to lead an art team rather than work solo to design the whole thing. So I figured out, you know, to actually hire people and to employ artists on it, I needed to create a company. So that was the start of it. It really was me and a few other, you know, designers that were really talented and great artists that were friends of mine. But as soon as we started putting work out there, you know, we had gotten all these requests and I just thought, well, why not? Let's hire more people. You know, I had a lot of friends that were at companies that were incredible designers, but maybe like not utilized and they wanted to try something new. So, you know, I brought on a bunch of my really talented friends to start designing for a bunch of different IPs. And it was a really kind of perfect time because, you know, the virus had just happened, so everybody was at home. You know, we didn't really have anything to do. There's a lockdown, we couldn't go outside. I couldn't go out and see friends. So it was the perfect time to really focus and get it done right. And what we specialize is really very high quality pre-production and production concept art. So a lot of people come to us for idea generation, for really great getting unique and memorable designs rather than, you know, just reinventing the same thing. Maybe they want to completely start from the beginning of a script or the beginning of a game and completely redefine the style. Mm-hmm. So that's mainly what we focus in, but we do everything from environments to characters to vehicles, you know, creatures, the whole package.
Right. Yeah. Got it. Well, here's a question I'd love to know. So you've got 50 artists working with you, most concept art or all concept art?
All concept art right now. We sometimes have modeling teams, but right now we're mainly concept art.
Okay. So when you're looking to hire a concept artist, what are you looking for that'll tell you if they're good or bad?
Yeah, you know, that's tough because there are a lot of really incredible designers that we don't hire. And the main thing is that we get contracted usually for work that's very high quality. People want experienced designers. So all the people we have on our team have already shipped, you know, multiple games and films. Like they've worked on productions for a long time. And that means that really those are the only people we can hire. We need people that already know their craft really well, who, you know how to design, so that when we work with them, you know, we're basically helping our client out by supplying really, really good quality artwork. When I look at portfolios, I look at people who are versatile, but already specialized. So someone that can either do environments or characters or creatures really, really well. You know, they have at least, you know, 20 projects in their portfolio that really demonstrate their skill. And they also need to be able to think and design very well. So they have to be able to, you know, sketch and work through compositions and ideas and still arrive at a very polished, you know, rendered final image. I'd say those are the main things we look for in general.
Okay, got it. So yeah. So experience is definitely a big one. What's in your CV if you've got experience there? If I was to show you, you know, some portfolios and you couldn't see whose name was behind it, and you were just looking at sort of a side by side, you said composition and design, but like what specific things would you be able to go like, okay, this is a pro? Like what would be a telltale?
Yeah, I think looking at someone's artwork, you want to look for things that are unique and original. You know, there's something, I think I actually had a conversation with you on Twitter about this a long time ago, but shape language. Do you remember when we were talking about that?
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, the kind of design fundamental and principle where, you know, you can really invent a very pleasing and aesthetically nice, you know, design by combining different things into something that's truly unique. And that sort of thinking is what I'm looking for. People who can, you know, they're maybe presented with a problem from the client, like they have to design something very new because every client, you know, they want their IP to be something special. And they're able to take that idea, and it could be their own idea. It doesn't have to be for a client. You know, it doesn't have to be some huge project. But they have to be able to take that idea and really elaborate on it and create something memorable, something archetypal. Okay. And I think that a lot of the time, a lot of concept artists will focus more on the illustration side, which is totally fine, but it's just also not what we get hired to do a lot of the time. We get hired to do the complex design work. So illustration, you know, you could be someone who downloads, you know, 100 models from Sketchfab and arranges them and renders them beautifully in Blender, right? That's one way you can do concept design. And it's perfectly valid. You know, I've been known to use Sketchfab models, and a lot of artists do as well. But it's also another thing to say, okay, we have this new civilization that is on another planet, and they use these types of resources to build their structures, these types of elements, and their whole society is influenced by some, like, storm that happened on the planet all this time ago. And, you know, that takes a different type of thinking, because then you have to think, well, how did this culture evolve over time? How do we design their architecture and their landscapes around this major event that occurred? And that is not something where you can, you know, go download assets online and repurpose them. It takes someone that can really think through, you know, all these different design challenges and problems to invent something that we haven't seen before, that someone could look at and say, wow, that's unique. I have never seen that in a film or game. And it's something that's thought-provoking and can be a basis for, you know, a three-game IP or a three-movie IP, something that you can really latch onto and say, okay, that's not generic. You know, you look at it and it's not going to just fade away into your memory of hundreds of beautiful images you've seen, but it's something that's thought-provoking that you're really actually interested in. So hopefully that kind of answers your question a little bit. Let me know.
Yeah, I sort of get the sense there. So that challenge of a new civilization that's, you know, their structures and things are sort of built around a storm or something, that is possibly an example of a project that a junior concept artist would struggle with.
Exactly. Not saying everybody would, but, you know, we look for the type of people who have already been through, you know, they already have some design chops. They've been through these problem solving situations before, so that we can really focus instead of having to art direct on, you know, basic technical abilities and basic design solutions. We can really brainstorm as a team to come up with some really, you know, groundbreaking ideas and concepts. And, you know, okay. the example of the storm, that's really just one example. If you look at all the popular games, you know, like Horizon and God of War and, you know, even Last of Us, a lot of them have, you know, these different elements in their history and in the plot of the game that influence how the world is created. And because of that, it informs every design decision that an artist has to make. So you have to go at it from a very strategic standpoint of trying to create something that will really be like an archetype for the rest of the series that can kind of last and hold its own against all the other games out there visually.
Mm. Do you find that concept art is sometimes a little bit like writing in that you're sort of, you know what, like do some concept artists have like writing experience and they're able to sort of...
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah, I mean, I think that many creative abilities go hand in hand, and oftentimes when someone is a painter, for example, or a creative, you know, it also lends itself to many other medias. You know, like I make music, I do a lot of other creative things besides just painting and design. Mm-hmm. And I think that any sort of actually many other skills that are in even other areas that aren't creative are very transferable and kind of give you an edge when it comes to design. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a biochemist and you become a designer, you're going to come at it with knowledge that many other people don't have that could definitely give your work a more unique, you know, design language than other people's. But writing, I think, is well, not essential. It's very useful to have as kind of a skill, because if you know about narrative and plot devices, it's just something that can add to your arsenal when you're creating something. If you understand how story works, you know, you're able to understand when you read a script how a keyframe you're illustrating is supposed to feel emotionally. So something like that, I can definitely see being a big upper hand when it comes to design.
Got it. Great. And so what can somebody who wants to develop those skills, what are some ways they could, or training or resources, or how can they develop this?
So, yeah, I think, I'm not sure if we spoke about this. We might've spoken about it a long time ago on the last time you interviewed me.
I'm
just a fan of people getting life experience, you know, outside of just art, because I feel like many artists are confined to just learning concept art as an end all be all and just spend all their time looking at other concept art, when in reality, what makes you a good designer is the experiences you have other than concept art, by traveling, by being inspired by museums or art galleries, or even just life experiences you have, you know, getting stuck in some random town on the way, you know, to a trip you're going to and taking out your drawing pad, you know. I would just encourage people to have other hobbies outside of art, because I think it not only does it just contribute to making you an interesting person, but it can contribute to happiness. And, you know, happiness influences your efficiency and productivity and all other areas of your life. You know, I'd encourage people to develop hobbies. Like, you know, I love making pottery. I love piano. I like making music. There's a lot of other things I like besides just art. And I wouldn't say they necessarily inform my artistic decisions daily, but I would say that my life experience has absolutely, you know, all the different places I've visited, even the people I've met, by going to different events, by going to concerts, by going out and going to events and meeting other creative people, that's 100% influenced my life in many ways. So I think that's something that could be really helpful for a lot of people to consider.
Got it. And this might seem like a silly question, but like, okay, what specifically, like when you're traveling, right, and you're getting this life experience, what are you taking in when you're stuck in a random town or something like that? I could see myself going there and just being like, just like frustrated, and then just coming away with like, you know, a mildly interesting story. But
yeah,
but what do you do? You mentioned taking out a pad and drawing.
Yeah, I mean, being someone who's more of, you know, I would say I have a closer affinity to being an environment designer than a character designer. So I look at it at one way while others might another. You know, one of the things that I would notice is how architecture is built. You know, if a building in, you know, this town was constructed, you know, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, and then added on to, and why those additions were made. Was it because of infrastructure? Was it a personal artistic touch that an architect made or someone has made by living there? Is it a communal effort? You know, did someone build a community garden or install a piece of public artwork? Is it something historical that maybe has been there for an extremely long time that has then been transformed by the community or left as a monument? You know, a lot of times I'll watch people's interactions because people in other countries will interact very differently than we do in the U.S. How people converse, you know, even where they're standing, what people are doing outside. You know, are they sitting around, you know, in tons of cafes on the street enjoying their day? Are they running? You know, what is the sort of mood around the city? When you're sitting outside having a coffee under the shade in the rain, for instance, in Paris, it's a very different feeling than when you're, you know, out in the mountains near LA. You know, there's different moods and different inspiring feelings you get when you're in these different sorts of places that, you know, I think many, you know, traditional painters have been inspired by to produce artwork because of that. So I, when I'm traveling, when I'm going around, I do try to take in as much of other nations' culture as I can to try to remember that moment and to try to understand what makes something believable and immersive. Because I think that it's the personal touches that really add to the nature and storytelling of images. And it's by observing the human nature of what makes a place human, what people have added to it over time, that can really benefit when you're designing something and you want it to be immersive.
Right. Got it. And have you always been curious like that? Or did that sort of arise out of doing art?
No, definitely. I mean, my mother is a journalist, and I used to travel with her when she was writing when I was growing up. So I definitely was always interested in other cultures when I was younger. And that definitely, I think, influenced a lot of who I am today, because I'm still very, very interested in similar things. But I guess my curiosity kind of evolved over time as I moved to LA from Chicago, and as I got to meet other instructors, other artists, and were inspired by other people who were also interested in different things than I was. I found that there really is a reason to be interested in almost anything. You know, I'm constantly trying to learn about other industries, other professions, you know, just different ways that people live their lives, because to me it is really, really interesting how someone could have a completely different life path as you and end up, you know, a very creative person that produces amazing content. You know, I have a friend who's the director of a skincare brand, and the way he thinks about product design and how it influences the customer's opinion and how the different colors combine on the products that he creates, you know, that has always been something that's very intriguing to me. So it's all these other things that, you know, I think influence us in life to both create art and to also be introspective about why we make art and why we're creative and why we produce something that we think is interesting as a form of expression. You know, those are the things that have been very interesting to me lately.
Hmm. That's fascinating. All right. Well, this might sound like a divergence, but I feel like it's related. What do you think, given the topic of AI, think that AI in regards to concept art generation, what is it good at and what is it bad at based on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, so maybe I can start with my first interaction with AI, actually, was a long time ago now. It was actually back in London when I was living there, and I think it was shortly before we met up at the WeWork. I do remember I was talking to you about making a company focused on AI at the time. I think
I may
have discussed that. So basically, I had, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that, I had been helping a developer to create something at the time that was known as GAN Breeder, which was run off of data sets through Google, hundreds of thousands, millions of images in different data sets that you would type in a word, something simple, and it would generate a texture, a square texture. And at the time, it was very simple. But to me, as an artist, it was inspirational because the texture, my paintings, they often have a very textural quality that deals with a lot of abstractness. And that really sparked my interest. So I was using it for concept art as a base, trying to understand how it could be beneficial to the process. And I even got so interested in it, I ended up hiring a developer to create a similar sort of program more attuned to what I wanted to do at the time. So that was my first interaction. At the time, I think I got the feeling that it was an incredible tool. You know, it was going to develop. It was going to get better. I wasn't, scared of it. You know, I'm still not, scared of AI in any way, shape, or form. But I did know, I did recognize it even back then as a tool that people were going to use that I was using and I could use as a base or for inspiration for paintings. Obviously AI is the subject of many discussions online right now. It's like the hot topic with Disco Diffusion and Midjourney and now DALL-E 2, which I think is the most impressive. It's mind-blowing. And they all have their ups and downs, right? I think with Disco Diffusion and Midjourney, I think the first times I saw them, probably the first like 50 images I saw both, I was really shocked. I was like, wow, this is incredible. This is going to change the game. This is incredibly interesting. And by the way, my opinions are my own. None of this is like some fact or something like that. Course. I think it was after those 50 images that you start to realize the pattern. You know, you start to see what is created by that application and what isn't. And it starts to lose its effect in a way. And it's interesting psychologically how that happens, because for me, I could, in the beginning when I was viewing these things, I would see something and be, stunned and really amazed and be analyzing all the details. And now when I see a painting by Midjourney or Disco Diffusion, it's not that I'm really like put off by it, but it just also, it doesn't hold a similar subconscious artistic value to me because my brain instantly recognizes the pattern in it. It's something that you've seen before. It's something that you're familiar with. So I think a lot of the time the value we place on art is if it's something that is subconsciously interesting to us, something that our brain hasn't recognized before. And for me, seeing these images over and over, my brain started to recognize it. So it started less interested. I think, it's interesting. I could point it out if I had some images.
Sure.
I think it's the way that it mixes these different prompts and the different styles, the different images together. You know, it still has a lot of abstractness, which I found interesting, because again, I really like abstraction. But it's something about the way it renders paint and the way it mixes colors and the shapes of everything is very noticeable. Even if it's painted over, it's very easy to tell when the base is a Midjourney or Disco Diffusion painting.
Really?
Wow. Yeah,
for me, I mean, I know a lot of other people have seen it, you know, and that's to say, you know, this is coming from someone who is, who looks at art every day, all day for many years. So I'm sure not everybody is going to have the same opinion or approach to it. And definitely someone that isn't as, you know, familiar with these things, like someone on the street would not, you know, recognize it at all. But for me, it's something that, it started to jump out as something that I've seen a lot. Now, that being said, it is an incredibly useful tool. I have used it. I'm planning on using it more. There are 100% uses for it that I think will be greatly beneficial in the industry. I can see it, you know, everybody can see that it's going to have a big impact. You know, it already has. It's going to be interesting to see how productions will use it in the future, because, you know, I'm sure there's tons of productions that are already, you know, using these things to generate ideas. I don't feel worried or scared about it. I think just like 3D when it first came out, you know, I have flashbacks to my early days in art school where, you know, I came in as a 3D artist to a program that was focused on painting and drawing. And immediately, like, all my 3D skills were shot down and considered worthless by everybody. So for me, for me, looking at it now, I don't see it as anything to be worried about. I see it as something useful for people to accomplish more with, to use as a tool to develop their ideas faster and better, you know, which is what, you know, concept art has continued to do. If you look at concept art 10 years ago, people did not have the speed or the attention to detail or any of the, you know, refined techniques that people use now. It's really always about, you know, how fast and how effective can you produce an image that clarifies a subject or fixes a problem in production. Now, DALL-E 2 is a different beast. That is crazy. I don't know if you've run some prompts through it yet, and I'm not talking about DALL-E Mini, I'm talking about the full-on DALL-E 2. I don't have an account, I'm on the waiting list, but I have used a friend's account to run a bunch of images, and the results are insane. Like, it's I'd run the same prompts through all three of, you know, Midjourney, Disco Diffusion, and DALL-E 2, and get vastly different results.
Yeah,
with DALL-E 2 being something that can actually design very well, surprisingly. You know, there are times where I'll run something through it and I'll get something back that looks like a fully finished, really interesting concept that I could easily see being a concept in a game or a film, and just one for one, you know, it's pretty incredible. You know, that being said, there are many, many projects out there and many that we work on at Terraform that require types of imagery that just can't be generated, because at the end of the day, these programs are mixing. It's a similar technique. You know, they're mixing. I mean, at least I believe so. I just want to clarify that, you know, they're using this huge, vast database of images combined with machine learning and prompts to generate these. At the end of the day, many of these projects that we all work on are looking for very unique original imagery. And once they have that style, they need to keep producing in that style. So if you design some piece of architecture for a game that's very specific, that incorporates things that are too specific, or maybe there's not enough of a data set for an AI to replicate it, it's not gonna be so useful for that. You know, you still need designers. Being said, I think being a student right now, I think, you know, would be a bit challenging, because you can see all these programs create incredible art. I do think, you know, skills like the fundamentals in painting and design are all still very, very relevant and needed, because it's at that moment, you know, if someone builds their career off of being someone who relies upon AI imagery without any of the underlying skills, and then you're tasked with a problem that the AI can't solve, then you're kind of helpless. Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's very interesting.
You know, I'm interested in the subject, and it's, you know, so relevant to what we do now, so I keep a close eye on everything that's evolving.
Yeah, you've probably seen discussions on both sides, you know, some that are like, you know, it's no different to, you know, Google image search. It's another tool to get reference and ideas.
and then others that are saying that that's just first gen. Like, this is going to get better and better and better to the point that it will be able to solve problems as well or better than humans. I don't know. I was very interested. You said you're definitely not worried by AI.
I'm not worried. Yeah, so I actually had a really interesting discussion with a friend of mine last night who's a game designer based about this, because he has a lot of experience using AIs for all sorts of stuff. He has people that use it for programming who can type in, you know, a little piece of code and have the AI generate better code than a human could. Same with music. You know, there's AIs that are working on music development. Yep. That work on writing. There's, you know, so many different avenues that this is being adapted to the point where, you know, he was saying, you know, 10 years in the future, we might be able to, I mean, maybe it could be more than that, probably more than that for this, but it was an interesting concept. You could be watching TV and an AI could create a whole film for you that day based on what you were feeling, you know, from start to finish. And then you watch this film, it's like, oh, it knows you so well, it's exactly what you're looking for, and then you share it with your friends. I think that's definitely a reality that could occur, 100%, you know? There were, I saw a really interesting presentation by someone at Google years ago at THU about another version that they had created where it could interpret and model things based off of a picture and a couple pictures, like two pictures of an image could model something very nicely. You know, obviously it still had issues.
You're talking about 3D modeling?
Yeah, 3D models. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be a point where you generate a painting, that painting then gets modeled by an AI, it goes into Unreal or whatever software, and you can walk around in it, and it'll make the production process much simpler for people, and we'll have a sea of content, you know, because everybody will now have access to the tools to create really whatever they want. I'm not worried, mainly because I just think that, you know, humans are always going to need eyes on something to decide whether something is interesting or not, to know good design decisions. Our industry is going to change 100%, you know, and I'm just not someone who is scared of change, really. You know, like, my life has changed every 6 months for the last 10 years. You know, I can make a plan and then things will be completely different. So at a certain point, you just have to roll with it and understand that there's, you know, there's always going to be a demand, I think, for certain skills. And I think design is a big one. Are people's jobs going to be replaced? I mean, that happens every day with all sorts of industries. I think it's up to designers and artists to adapt and to recognize, you know, where the industry is headed and how they can, you know, both work on their passion and continue to be creative and designers and create what they want to create. But it definitely is something that I think people should pay attention to rather than just avoiding. You know, I see a lot of people that just dismiss it entirely and say, oh, this will not change anything. You know, it's not going to have any impact. It already has. I'm using it for paintings. I have artists that are using it for paintings. You know, it's definitely coming. You know, it's here in many ways. It's going to just get exponentially better as more programmers understand that it's something they can contribute to and how much of an impact it can have. It's just going to get more people's eyes on it. So I think it's important to be open-minded and to understand that a change is going to happen. And if you're someone that will accept that and learn from it, benefit from it, then you're going to do better on the other side of whatever it happens. I don't know when that change is coming. You know, it's a day-by-day thing. New tools are being introduced into our workflows all the time. You know, like the software packages that I started out with when I was a student are completely different. And they change every year, you know, and I'm sure you're very familiar with this because you're always, you know, I see your posts and you're always talking about new softwares, new techniques, new tools. You know, we're just, humans are always trying to improve and better the stuff that we use to design. And I think that, you know, people should just be aware of it and not freak out, but, you know, live in the moment and try to understand how they can be better designers, you know, with the aid of these tools as they come up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it would be foolish to say that it won't, that some jobs will not be taken away, right? Mm-hmm. Because if there's a pipeline and you've got junior artists that are basically taking idea generation at a sort of a simple level, that could be done with prompts on a screen as well as giving it to a junior. So there's that. But then what you don't know is what, I mean, for one aspect of it, like, what's an easy way to think of it? It's like photography, right? Like 10 years ago, or 20, 30 years ago, 20, let's go 20. The cost of photography was just so huge, right? And the idea that like you'd be about, you'd have the ability to create photographs at like the 10th of the cost. Yes. I mean, some photographers might've freaked out by that notion, but if you look at what actually happened was it just meant that there was more jobs in photography because instead of like just maybe like one or two top newspapers being able to hire a photographer, you know, all the little local ones could hire photographers too. And then now it's on a phone and now it's like, it's, there's even more work, right? Even for like the tiniest little small business could take photographs of their cupcakes, like my wife does, you know, like, because it's so simple. So maybe what we're seeing with AI and art is like, art has been so expensive for so long. And it's one of the big things they discuss with games about, what's sort of stopping, a lot of like metaverse predictions or like these sort of grandiose worlds is like the cost to create that content is shooting up exponentially. There was a guy, I can't remember who made the presentation, but it was great. And he tracked the graph, like a log graph of the cost of video games year on year. And it's just going up exponentially to like, it's not that out of the realm that most AAA titles will now cost over $200 million in just production alone. Yeah. And it's like you can't really, we need to get that cost down essentially is what it is. So maybe it's like, okay, those types of games, there's only been, you know, I don't know how many, what classes is AAA? I don't really know. But let's say there's 10 AAA titles a year or something. Well, it's like, well, maybe in 20 years, there will be 10,000 AAA quality games a year. Because the one single thing, person can make it themselves.
Yeah, like the thing that I'm wondering about, Andrew, and I'd love your opinion on this, is who is going to play all of those games? There's going to be so many, man. Like, I don't know how many games you get to play a year.
Yeah.
I don't get to play that many games a year. I mean, I, you know, I love games, but it's just, you know, there's other priorities now. And it's, I mean, I agree with you, though. We're going to be in a sea of content. We're going to have tons of stuff from films, short films, games, TV shows, all sorts of stuff. It's going to be so easy to have a good idea and get it out there. And I'm very curious, you know, like what's going to happen, you know, is it going to lower the cost of buying a game as well? Is it going to make it so that, you know, studios just release, you know, endless waves of titles in the hope that one of them becomes viral and then catches on. It's going to be really interesting to see, but I completely agree with you. I think the cost is going to go down for a lot of things. It's going to be a very interesting period of time, the next 10 years, when it comes to all this stuff.
Quick pause to talk about you as a 3D artist. You want to be able to create good images. We all do. And that means you have to use your time wisely. And using your time wisely is not spent dealing with assets that you find randomly online. User-generated content is great when it works and is bad, really bad, when it fails. That means if you buy a model or you buy a texture or material, it should just work. And that is the problem that we are trying to solve at Polygon. We are a team of artists who are vetting the content that we create to create high quality textures and models and HDRs that just work. We've got very experienced artists that work in the industry. We know what goes into a good quality asset, and that is what we strive to create. So we have
artists around the world that are going out capturing rare types of materials, generating models, and that is all at Polygon, of course, my company, Polygon.com, where you can find all sorts of assets for your next project. The link is in the show notes, description, wherever it is, or Polygon, Polygon.com for all of your asset needs. Now, back to the interview.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of people, my prediction on it is like, who would play 10,000 games? You're right. It takes too long to get into it. There's too much involved. Most people just won't. And I think it wouldn't change the distribution of like, you know, if you look at the App Store, it's like 80% of games earn $0. 10% of them earn from $0 to $50, which is like basically nothing still. And then, you know, at the, you know, 0.001%, it's like that's where 80% of the revenue is or something like that, right? And I don't think that would change. It's like there'd be 10,000 games, but like, you know, still people only play about 10 of them because they're the big ones, right?
Okay, I see.
I think it would just be a moving target. But I think also there's the concept of the metaverse that a lot of people are like skeptical on, and they're like, it's just a hype word. And it is. It definitely is a hyped word because it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
But it does not mean that it will not exist at one point in the future. And I think that it seems inevitable that people will want to live in these and experience these games more and more and more to the point that, and that's the other thing, like people want the longevity of that world to last, like Fortnite, right? They have to keep updating it with like seasons and content and things like that to make it interesting and fresh.
People get bored very quickly.
Yes, they do get bored very quickly.
They need constant, you know, new constant things to latch onto.
And I think up until now, like, we haven't really got that much user-generated content. I think Roblox is sort of maybe the furthest in that realm, Minecraft, that kind of thing. But the idea that, like, for example, you could create your own gun or horse in Red Dead Redemption-style game, that is, like, out of the... Like, no one is even imagining that yet, but I think it would happen.
Oh, yeah.
Not definitely. Happen without AI.
Yeah, people would be able. No, you're totally right. People would have unlimited choices about what they would be able to create. Definitely.
Create and I think buy that's gonna be interesting. As well.
Yeah.
I think people will be. That would be sort of a new economy of. Of people creating, you know, creating unique, much like there's the whole, you know, different space of retail, people selling ceramic pots, people selling tech devices. There could be that variance within a game. And the other crazy concept is being able to take that item from one game into another game, which also does not happen at the moment because there's just no interoperability between engines, between games. There's a great post. I posted it yesterday, actually, on Twitter. But it was a big breakdown on like all the hurdles and obstacles that are stopping a metaverse from existing today. But what will likely happen? One of them is for one, like just standards, people saving things in different formats. What are maps? You know, where are they stored?
Cross-platform, you know, coexistence. You know, how do you get a gun from one game to translate to the next game without sharing the same asset and files?
And like, how's the character going to be able to hold it? Right, if it's like you've put, if it's made of bubbles or something, how are they?
Yeah,
like,
are they using different
AI
rigs?
Has
you know,
to come into it.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't work without it.
But
there's the Metaverse standards. Forum was just formed. It was announced last week. All the major, like any Epic, Adobe, NVIDIA, pretty much any large game company, Sony, they've all joined it because they can all see the problems with 3D right now. There's just taking something from one thing and putting it in the other. Like even a simple from one studio to another. It's all, it's like, why did
Very
you put
complex.
It in there? Like, you're not using the right naming convention. You're not, you know. So like simple stuff like that. We want to figure it out. We've also joined it at Polygon as well because we're trying to create the content that people will use in game engines. But yeah, it's a very interesting space. And it's also very hard to predict. I see even Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, which created DALL-E, He said in a blog post, it was like when people were theorizing about AI, it was theorized that first AI would take non-cognitive tasks, the construction, labor, anything sort of manual. Then it would take cognitive tasks, writing, accounting, bookkeeping, that kind of stuff. And then the last that it would be able to tackle would be creative tasks.
I know. That's what I thought too. Happening in reverse. It's going to be one of the first ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's so crazy.
Yeah. And it came straight for the artist. No messing around.
Yeah.
Totally. Which nobody predicted. And he said, that goes to show you AI is very hard to predict.
Yeah.
So it's fun to theorize. We could be totally off. Who knows?
Are you, when this great change happens, are you going to be doing something different with Polygon to support AI, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to say too much because, you know, ideas can change. But definitely, like, you can't just have an asset library anymore, right? Because, I mean, okay, so it's Dolly is making concept art now. Pretty soon, you're going to be able to, as you said, have an image and then have that just generate a model, right?
Yeah.
And it won't be perfect at first, but it will get perfect eventually.
Yeah. And at first there'll be tons of people just cleaning it up, right? There'll be a cleanup crew who take whatever it spits out and then remesh it, you know, fix it.
Yeah. Fix the map. Yeah. Make it that. But eventually it'll just nail it to almost 99% of the time. So you can't just have an asset library in the future. So, I mean, one thing that we've always focused on is usability and search. We've got plugins now. We're about to release this new Blender plugin to bring it all into your sidebar so that you can search, download, and import in one click. And then beyond that, I guess we have announced it, but yeah, basically we're doing partnerships. So we're trying to create basically IP designs, sorry, models with IP. So furniture, that's what we're focusing on right now.
Oh yeah, no, I remember you're telling me.
Because that is something AI could not or should not be able to create, is IP that somebody else owns. So there's that.
It shouldn't be able to, but we'll see if people make laws around it. It'll be,
and then also it won't stop someone from just like uploading a photograph of like, you know, a chair by Minotti and then just generating the chair. Yeah. So it's like, but still, there are, we're working on a few things.
Totally.
What do you see as the future of the concept art industry?
It's like you said, it's so hard to predict how things will develop in a few years. You know, it might be that at some point there is a blocker with how AI is currently being developed, where, you know, samples images where it can only get up to a certain complexity level, you know, like say if you have to design, maybe you have like a player in a game, right? And they have a command deck for their spaceship that is decked out with all these personal items. Well, is it eventually going to get to the point where you can input all that information and it, you know, you're able to move around all these different items? It'll be interesting to see, you know, how I could see it eventually getting there, maybe, you know, but we'll have to see how it develops. I think the first step will be, you know, like you said, I think the junior artists who used to be, you know, generating ideas and content, this is just my opinion and it's kind of crazy to even talk about it, but, you know, people who are more junior might just be running prompts and then gathering images and, you know, doing quick paint overs of those. Or, you know, maybe just you'll have someone who just spends their whole day doing research by gathering, you know, thousands, and then someone else, like an art director, combs through and selects the ones that work. You know, that could be the start of it. But I still think we're probably a ways off from that level. You know, there's still no way to be extremely specific. In terms of how long it'll take, gosh, who knows? Years, maybe. But I could see within like 5 years, for instance, that totally being something that you can do. Like if you have a way to classify a prompt in a way where, you know, you have one area for the style, you know, one area for the main subject, and then a bunch of items that you want there. And maybe there's some sort of live, you know, rendering screen where you can physically move the placement of those objects if the AI can recognize those objects as what they are. You know, I could see that being incredibly useful. And then it becomes like a live simulation 3D program where, you know, it can recognize the different assets that you want in your scene, and you're able to move them around as it generates something live for you. So I could see that being very useful. I do think there's going to be a big phase where you just will need art direction. You'll need someone who can watch over and really make the calls about what is a good idea and what isn't, and what is useful and worth spending time on. You know, that's just, again, just my opinion. It's just one way things could unfold. But, you know, that's the way I could see it going currently. I think probably the simple illustrator jobs will probably be replaced. You know, if someone needs an illustration of a bear or, you know, a very simple piece of architecture that already exists, you know, or a street, or, you know, anything really like man-made that's already exists that just needs to be reinterpreted, I think those are going to be so easy to do. Those will probably be jobs that are better suited for an AI, because you could just quickly go through and type in tons of prompts. I think it's the thing that'll be much harder is when you have to start inventing something that is very different, that has plot implications, that ties into a larger IP. For instance, if you're doing something for Marvel, there's so many different complexities. I can't see, you know, a way for that to really work out without having a lot of human interaction involved. You know, you could, maybe there'll be a way in the future to have a data set where you import, you know, assets from your computer, and you tell it to just use these images as data sets, and maybe you won't need hundreds of thousands to train them anymore. You know, it's up in the air. We're going to have to see where it goes. But neither way, I can see it being very useful.
I think it'll definitely start, we'll be in this sort of like, as you mentioned, this between stages of like, we got the kind of like the old art direction, you know, like it's even crazy, like just thinking like, you know, how slow software development has been since we started, you know, like in the last, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
It, you know, like people that were in like the 90s, like they were still using some software that we're still using today. Like it's basically, it hasn't changed that much.
It hasn't been like revolutionary, right? Yeah.
No, that's right. And I think like, for example, in the next like 2 years, you might see the same amount of change that we've seen in like the last 10. Mm-hmm. And then the next year after that could be like another 10 years worth of change. And like it could, the change will happen faster and faster and faster.
Yeah.
And so to your point, any sort of resistance is futile.
You
can't ignore it.
You're not going to be able to stop it.
It's going to change things quickly. It is. I mean, to be perfectly honest myself, it is a little scary. And just, I mean, just the fact that I don't think most people do understand exactly what AI is doing, right? Or machine learning is doing. It seems to be learning in similar ways to a human is, right? In fact, I had this thought exercise the other day, and it sounds about right. It's like if you gave an artist $100,000 and said you can hire anybody on Fiverr to achieve your art project or whatever it is you want to create, that's kind of what AI is probably going to be doing in 5 years. It's like giving everybody $100,000 that they could spend on Fiverr for junior artists to create. Basically, it's going to be doing a lot of grunt work, which has right now been done by a lot of juniors, but soon the AI will do. But are there limitations to it? I don't know if it is actually learning like a human is or not.
I don't know. I know your question completely, and I just don't know about the process behind it to understand that. I think they all take very different approaches to generation. You know, looking at the same prompt across all these different programs yields such different results. in terms of how they develop things. And, you know, we're going to see improvements being made in the next few years as well that'll probably blow what we currently have out of the water. In terms of, like, the daunting aspect of it, I mean, Andrew, like, just being someone who knows you, you are a creative person. You're someone, I think, who is a problem solver, and you can obviously find ways, I think, in the coming, you know, change that's going to happen to take advantage of the situation in a way, like, to either by using it for business or something. Like, I know that, you know, most people are going to be open-minded to it, you know, I hope at least. And I think change can be scary. Like, I think if I was starting out, it would be a lot scarier to me. But knowing what I do about the industry and just about, you know, myself and other people that I work with, I think that artists will find a way to endure. I don't think it's going to wipe out art in any way. I think it's just going to change the way we approach and do things. You know, I think a lot of people use the argument, you know, photography didn't wipe out painting when it came into existence. You know, that's what I've been hearing a lot. I think it's kind of a different situation in this case than that. But I think it's going to take away a lot of the jobs that could be more boring for people to do first. And I think it'll leave people, at least initially, a lot more room to be original and to create, you know, even better ideas and better designs. But hey, I could be wrong, and maybe in 2 years I'm not even running a studio anymore. You know, maybe it's just maybe it'll be an AI art direction studio, and every artist will be running an AI every day, just getting prompts. You know, who knows? Who knows?
Exactly.
I have faith that people will adapt to it in some way or the other. You know, I do think that people are gonna figure out, you know, a way to keep their professions and skills alive. I think all the time that people have taken to learn and develop as artists will be worth it in some way in the end, you know. It's not Ragnarok, you know. It's not going to be the end of our artist careers.
Got it.
That's just what I feel, though. I don't know.
I don't know. It is interesting, sort of the different predictions and different outlooks people have on it, and you can definitely see the difference between sort of like younger artists and older artists. I find I see a lot of older artists are very sort of like taken aback and more of the resisting type.
Oh, definitely.
They've been doing it for, you know, 20 years, and it's like, what the hell? It'll never do what I've been doing, you know. Whereas the younger guys are like, oh, look at this. I can do, you know.
Yes.
It's so cool. It saved me this time.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of people. I totally sympathize with you. I know a lot of people who, I think just people form habits, right? They find a way of working that they really enjoy. And especially if it's over a long period of time, 10, 15, 20 years, it does get harder to really break out of that. And, you know, you feel so confident in what you do and your abilities and the way you've been doing things that I think change does get scarier. It gets harder to learn. I think, you know, obviously, you know, when you get older, and I mean, that's not really fair to say. I wouldn't say it gets harder to learn. I just think that maybe technology isn't as readily available and easy to grasp. You know, like I struggle today to grasp a lot of the technological concepts that, you know, my cousins who are 16 and 17 are understanding completely. You know, I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on a lot of these new applications, you know. I'm sure there's going to be things that come about that confuse me in the future. And I just think that, you know, in certain ways, I've been set, you know, in my way of production, of my way of doing things. I do think it's important to remind myself that it's okay for change to happen, and, you know, that you either change or you get left behind a lot of the time. You know, I think there's certain people, certain styles that will always be classic. You know, there's going to be people who do not need to learn technology because they're so sought after for their individual traits and abilities that it doesn't really matter. But I think for the majority of people, like, it is going to be something that we're going to have to learn for sure. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. And I definitely think that the mindset of the person will impact how it's received and how mm-hmm. you react to it. There was a study, actually, a psychological study, where they had people sit down and they gave them a newspaper and they said, count the number of adverts that are in this. You've got 1 minute. And if you correctly guess the number of adverts that are in it, you get $50 or something like that. Right. So you basically have to like, kind of like flick through it or something like that. And they, but they'd asked the candidates beforehand, do you think, you're lucky? Was the question. I are you lucky? And some people said yes, some people said no, right? In the test, the first page, if you turn the first page, there's a big, huge page in huge letters that says, there are 56 adverts in this. Stop the test and tell the whatever, the person, there are 56 ads. And the people who said they do not feel lucky just went straight past it, didn't see it. Whereas the people who said they were lucky, they spot it and they went, there's 56 adverts. Well, and then they won.
So interesting. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's basically, it's a Rorschach test. You see what you see, you know? If you approach AI with like, oh no, here's another thing I'm going to get ramroded by and it's, I can't keep up. What's the point? I might as well switch industry. I should, you know, do something else. Whereas others, if you approach it from the look of opportunity, you will be able to spot areas of opportunity for yourself. That mindset is, it's a struggle. I mean, I can see most people honestly just on the negative side, and not really. And I don't know if it's anything to do with today's culture. There's this sort of revolt against tech and it's like, tech is bad. And
we're also going through some hard times as a society in the world, you know?
Yes.
It can be hard to stay positive, I think, for most people.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Another thing, you know, added on to that for a lot of
people. Oh, sure. Yeah. It's like, it's just weighing you down. Now the floor is shifting and it's another thing. I mean, at the simplest thing people could do is just stop watching the news. This news, it's got to be killing more people than COVID every year just from stress. I swear to God. Most of it is unnecessary. You just don't need to watch it. The moment you just stop caring and you stop listening to the news, life gets so much easier. You get more interactions, relationships with people you care about, you know. That's my philosophy. I don't know.
I mostly agree with you, except for the fact that if we were to stop doing the United States, then we would be uninformed about the changes and effect we're having on our government and our country, which is some of the biggest issues we have right now are because of voting turnout from people not understanding the political system. That's the only part but I generally agree with you in the fact that like the media capitalizes on negative articles to capture more attention for sure.
Yeah. I mean, they've got to have those conversations at like, you know, the news groups where it's like, you know, like there must be like some young journalist comes in there and he's like, he's got a little pep in his step. Like, I think I found a good article that they'll like. And it's like, it's positive, you know, we've got the stats. Stress and negativity bring people back 10x. I think it is actually 10x.
I'm sure it is. I think I heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like
anger especially is the most potent emotion that you can have in a viewer, which is like so messed up.
Yeah.
It's just so bad.
Yeah. So don't freak out, guys. Keep positive.
Yeah.
It doesn't
sound that good, but.
I know. That's the thing. Like, I know a lot of people will probably listen to this and think that, you know, we're doomed as artists. I genuinely don't think that. I think just people have to change how they're thinking. You know, when I was a student, a lot of the classes I was being taught were already obsolete, and that signified a change in the industry. And that's why I ended up going to school at Brainstorm and other colleges, because I needed to learn techniques that were up to date. I think this is going to be similar in a way, at first at least. It's, you know, it's going to be a big change in how you approach design. And yeah, it's just, I think, yeah, artists just have to have hope. You know, if you're going to be an artist and you're going to chase your dream and your passion, then you have to be undeterred, because... You know, life's going to throw so many different curveballs at you when you're not expecting it, and you just need to be strong and get through it in the end. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think also every industry will be affected. It's not like art is the only one.
Oh, definitely. It's not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it just happens to be maybe one of the first. But yeah. I think in the next few years, I think a lot of industries will be affected. And it's, you 100%. Know, it's the... It's really, it's tech at the end of the day. It's just tech that's moving faster. And it's doing things that previously you didn't think were possible. But then again, a lot of tech can be like that at the start. So,
yeah.
But anyways, that was a long discussion about AI, which is very interesting.
No, it's super interesting. The developments happening every day is crazy, so... I'm wondering what's going to be next as well. Like, what is the next thing that's going to be as revolutionary as this will be?
Yeah.
Because it is, like you said, nothing's really disrupted the industry in a while. I think it could be similar to something when, like, you know, everybody was a matte painter and then digital painting came along. You know, it's that level of a change.
Will we all be developers in the future?
That'd be interesting. Oh my god, I would not make it as a coder. I don't think I could.
I know.
I don't think my brain works like that, unfortunately.
Coming back to let's come back to concept art, because it's still this black hole for me that I do not understand of I mean, honestly, as a 3D artist, I don't feel I can create good designs. Maybe that's like self-defeating, but like I feel that most 3D art is technical. It is not actually creative or aesthetical, if that's a word. Whereas concept art is the opposite, I find. Like the technical side of like knowing layers and brushes and things, Photoshop, that's a small part of the curriculum. Most of it is around shape, language, design, narrative, all that stuff that 3D artists just don't even get into.
I will comment on that statement. Did you ever take like a course on design, or were you always approaching it from, because I remember when you're doing your drawings, you were approaching it from a technical perspective, right? You're like trying to copy reality. Have you ever tried to apply something like that and drawn 100 robots?
Yes.
You did. Okay.
But not to a full, not to the degree that I was trying to do reality.
Because here's the thing for me, and I think for a lot of people, the learning design took much longer than learning the technical ability. The technical ability I got, you know, in my first two terms at Art Center, you know, like, I think it was like, 8 months? And I'd been practicing a bit of drawing before that. But the whole rest of my education, like another 2 years of like literally 10 hours a day, were just focused on different levels of design, of composition, of narrative, of, you know, the shape language stuff, of story development, of, you know, all these, you know, shape relationships, proportions, you know, all this other stuff. Because, yeah, it is... a huge portion of what we do. And I think there's definitely a lot of concept art jobs right now that involve more illustration than design. But I think that what is required right now in the industry, at least as it is today, is the design stuff. That's the bulk of the requests we get and that are hard to fill, is that everybody needs good designers, people who can, you know, really think outside of the box and can think at a very high level. And that is what there isn't enough of, you know, when I probably know every senior concept artist at the industry in this point from looking at, you know, thousands of portfolios. I mean, I know them just by seeing their work. You know, I mean, I know a lot of artists, but just I've viewed so many artists trying to find other designers, you know, and it's just there's not a ton of people who really are at that level. They don't, you know, have to be it's a good really designer not. And then you need years of experience. And so, yeah, it's tough. It's definitely tough to get those skills and abilities, 100%.
What the thing that I always struggle with, though, is what is the feedback loop? Because the reason I keep coming back to reality is that there is one. There is a feedback loop. You know when you have failed because you can put them side by side or on top of each other. If I've drawn a face and I've drawn it in a realistic style from a photograph, I can put it over the top and I can go, look, the proportions are off here. The shading was wrong here. This was off here. And then that means that I've learned something from that so that when I do the next one, I can try to correct for those areas. Yeah. And that feedback loop is, I find, one of the most important things for learning art. Yeah. If I draw a stylized version of the person, I do not know if I am further away or closer to good design.
That's the issue, is that that's one of the issues, is that it takes usually a mentor, a teacher, to sit down and explain it. Yeah, that is a really tough thing, because it is, a lot of it is just about taste, and it takes like a lot of time and hammering into someone to understand what, you know, good taste is and good design is. I'm not saying you don't have good taste, Andrew. I just want to clarify that.
I don't have good taste. I'm just saying I'll say that.
No, you do. It's more that, it's more that like the biggest steps that I learned was from either a teacher explaining it to me, or when I was working in a design studio, when I was working on a game or a film, and, you know, maybe the senior or lead would come over and literally like go through the images and explain, do you see how, you know, this makes it too busy, or do you see the shape proportion here? You know, I can actually think back at several moments in my life where, you know, maybe 10 or 20 minutes of that feedback changed the way I thought about design forever. And that was the most helpful process to me, was learning from other people. It wasn't something that, you know, you can practice on your own all you want, but you do need with design, I think, someone to show you what you can improve on. Yeah. And it is different from technical skills.
That's a great answer, because I've never had someone explain that. And that makes total sense. It's been a suspicious of mine that the only way to get that feedback is with a mentor. So it's good to hear you say that.
Usually, yeah.
Well, then a follow-up question for somebody who doesn't live in LA next to Barnstorm and all these other great art schools. Where can you find a mentor or a good online school?
There's so many online platforms now. You know, there's so many. You know, you have like Learn Squared and man, there's tons of other ones. I'm not as familiar with the online platforms these days as I used to be, but trust me, they are out there. You can get a mentorship with John Park. You can get a mentorship with Jama Jurabev. You can get, you know, tons of different design mentorships.
I think you could get with them. That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you can sign up.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think IAMAG has their own mentorship program with tons of artists already listed there that will, you know, you see their hourly rate and you just sign up with them. So there are, I think this, at least right now, this is like the best time to be seeking an education in this, because it is available anywhere. You don't have to be in a city. You know, I think Brainstorm might still all be online right now. So many schools have switched to online schooling. So, there are a lot of options, thankfully.
Yeah. Thank you, COVID. Yeah, no, that's very true. I haven't looked at some of the top schools, but yeah, I just had a quick look. Brainstorm online. Yeah, it's all online. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So basically, guys, you got to put your money where your motivation is. You got to sign up.
I mean, the other thing you can do if people don't want to pay for classes is organize like a Discord group or some group of your friends where you are all learning together and you could get their opinions on things. And maybe, you know, one of them is more experienced designer that can kind of show you the ropes. I think collaborative projects really helped me a lot when I was a student. So working with other artists and designers and all working on the same IP together, because then you can share ideas. And if you're open to getting that feedback and support, it really is super beneficial. So highly recommend that too, to kind of foster a community of designers.
Yeah. Although I would say you get what you pay for, and sometimes it can be blind leading the blind with that Discord group.
It can definitely. You have to pick and choose carefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it definitely, like, for an artist who is really trying, like, it's not that unusual for, like, a senior artist to offer, like, free help to somebody who they can see.
No, it is not really not trying. Usual. No, and I wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't, you know, I get emails.
Oh, I was going to say it's not unusual.
It's not unusual.
I was saying, like, sometimes I get, like, I mean, like, you get people that sort of like message you and say, like, hey, could you help me with this? And most of them never come back, right?
Yeah.
But there's a few where they said, like, hey, I listened to your feedback and now I've done this. And you go, like, oh, okay. And then you give more feedback and then they go away and then they come back again. And there's something about that where it's like, you're kind of like cheering them on a little bit. Like,
yeah.
It's free. Like, they're not paying me for my time, but I can see
that this
is... It's
really nice of you to do that.
Like, there's this young artist who is, like, really trying, and you can see they're trying, and they're going through hardship. And it's... I don't know. There's something about... But I don't know. You're saying that's not usual?
Well, I would say that, you know, I think I used to do that a lot. You know, like, I used to have a Twitch channel. I used to do overpaints and help a ton of people.
All right.
Life has just gotten so busy now that I try to spend as much time as I can away from the computer. And so I do get, you know, asked to do mentorships, and I unfortunately just I'm not able to. I know other people on my team do. There's definitely people at Terraform that have done mentorships and do answer questions and do critiques. I just say that if I was a student, I would try, but I wouldn't expect a response from everybody.
Yes.
Because everybody has, you know, a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, I mean, that is definitely how you could get a mentor. If you show someone that you care and that you're dedicated and they're willing to help you, then it's an incredible thing for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Learning how to ask for help and then building up some sort of rapport. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's rare. It's simple to ask for help. It's much harder to actually implement it and then come back and continue and hone the craft. Most people don't. So yeah. Interesting. Cool. Maybe we should put together a list of like mentors that are like recommended or something. Because I think now people want to know that question.
Yeah, I mean that IMAG mentor site. I think there's a ton of artists listed there that people can sign up for. That should be really helpful to them.
IMAG.co.
I can give you the link to it afterwards.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Excellent. IMAG.
Yeah.
Cool. Great. Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit. We touched on it at the start. Terraform is roughly 50 artists.
Yes, we've gone mostly up and down since then, but it's right now around 50. Yeah.
Okay. And are you working mostly film or games as well?
You know, it changes up all the time because the nature of the industry, most projects are 3 to 4 months long. We have some that have been going on for years, but I would say the most of the projects are 3 to 4 months long. So it really just depends on the time of year, you know, what's happening, you know, and I would say that film tends to be a bit more unreliable in the sense that it's more prone to change. You could be ready to start something and then there's a script change and then that drags on for a while. But we do have a lot of movies we worked on coming out soon and TV shows. I would say the majority of our content is games these days, is AAA games. Which has been really fun.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you find there's a lot more content needed for games?
Generally speaking, yes. There's a lot more. It's a much longer development time. I mean, a game could have 4 years of art development, whereas a film, you know, there's some films that are crazy like that, but most are definitely not. You know, most require much less time. And in games, there's just so many things that can happen. You know, it could completely change, and you have to redesign everything, or, you know, maybe they work on an expansion, or maybe they're developing their second title after you're done with their first title. So there's a lot of other possibilities, whereas films tend to kind of peter off after it's been released and filmed and published.
Got it. And am I understanding it right that concept is at the early stage of production? Is it always the early stage?
Not always. I would say most of the time concept starts at the earliest phase of production. So most of the time you will have pre-production, which is the very beginning of a film or game, where they find the style, they find the initial look for all the characters, environments, creatures. And that could last as, you know, short as a couple months to years. You know, it could really be a long time. It really depends on the budget.
Right.
When you start in a production phase for a game, basically what that means is you've set the style and tone for most, if not everything. It has its own style and form language, shape language. You know, you have an art Bible is what they call it. And, you know, the modelers and environment artists have started to block out the level designs. And then instead of, you know, you coming up with blue sky ideas, which is like very rough ideations and initial steps towards developing something, you're usually painting over a level block out that's almost like a gray box. So, you know, the level artists have made a bunch of, you know, level blockouts for where the player can go, where they can't go. It's usually very basic. And like, you're like, painting
like
sort over
of like
it
a three-quarter top-down view kind of view.
It could be, or it could be from the player's perspective a lot of times.
Okay.
And then you're basically going to interpret that into what the final game would look like if, you know, you're standing there in the game. And then the environment artist will then take that and model it. So that's kind of how things shift in production.
Yeah. Okay, got it. And, right, okay. And then I suppose also, I mean, maybe depending on the game, they might want you to, like, design every little element and little box and little canister and thing that will sit in that game. Is that right?
You know, it's funny. Some games, yes. Some games, no. There are some games that want to be very specific with their art, like to the point where you could be designing a rat, you know, that's wandering around, or a stack of gold coins or some papers on a desk. And there's others that will just leave that to the environment artists. There's also other games we've been on where, you know, the environment artists are so good, they don't even need concept teams. You know, they could literally design a whole level and concept it while they're designing it. They can just model it from scratch because they're very good designers. But most of the time, I would say stuff like that, like, you know, cans of soup and small, you know, items, that is usually done by the environment artists who usually already have assets like that they can use to populate the space.
Okay. Got it. Right. That's pretty funny. Rat. Okay. And is it hard with a, because obviously like one concept artist knows, there's things that sort of they're unspoken in their conscious mind on how they're designing shapes and things like that. Across a team, is it hard to get everybody onto the same page?
See, that's the thing. I think with junior people, it can be harder. Not saying this is impossible. It can be harder. With senior designers, no. I think it's much easier because you just generally, when you have like two or three titles under your belt, you've had to switch your style multiple times. I mean, by the time I had finished my second job of working at ILM, I think I had 2 years of experience. I had worked on like six different IPs. And so I already was very comfortable with like switching my style on the go. So generally speaking, that shouldn't be a huge issue to any experienced designer. That being said, like making a switch from, you know, if you're a live action artist and you want to do something for animation, that could be a larger jump. That could be a bit tougher, you know, because that is such a different way of thinking in terms of how you push forms and proportions that I could see it not working out as well.
Okay. Got it. Right. Yeah. Okay. Slight divergent. You've been doing concept art for a very long time.
Yes.
What is a style or a concept that you feel Hollywood or games have not yet, like it hasn't been done? Because you must see the same sort regurgitated ideas. But like, what's something you're like, you're itching, like, I wish somebody was brave enough to do this.
You know, that's quite hard to say. I think that most things definitely have already been done. in some way, right? I do think that where Hollywood tends to shy away is stuff that is appealing to a smaller audience. So, you know, not saying that I like really need to see this, but things that are more psychedelic and very strange and otherworldly, things that have designs that are very unconventional in terms of strange and weird design language, I think that is very rarely touched upon.
Okay.
You know, I think in the majority of the industry tends to go for mass appeal. They, you know, it goes for how many people can we sell a product to and makes decisions based upon that. So it tends to not target
or bizarre.
Yeah. Too bizarre, I think, is a good word. It's like they tend not to target niche groups of people. So there could be, you know, a group that's very interested in, you know, some very disturbing Lovecraftian horror stuff that just isn't. I mean, you start to see it come back, actually, Lovecraftian stuff. It started to appear in some like Netflix shorts and some TV series. But I mean, there's still like a lot of kind of unexplored territory in the more psychedelic realm of films. Not saying that I like need to see that. I'm just saying that the smaller the audience, the less it's going to be explored when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense when you think about it, because,
yeah,
you know, if you're throwing, especially for like Hollywood and AAA games, with that amount of money,
it's risky.
It's so risky to just throw it all at like, let's do something that hasn't been done before.
Yes.
It's like, well, maybe audiences who are not in art and they're not movie reviewers aren't prepared to, you know, on a Friday night after they've finished working at the logging factory to take a risk with you.
Yeah. They you know, sometimes something. People just want mindless entertainment, you know, just to chill and not even think about what they're watching.
Yeah. So. And some form of like context of like, okay, it's like I've seen Star Wars. I know the concept of spaceships and deep space and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like a movie based on like by microscopic level with biological shapes and
that would be interesting.
Shape-shifting time portals and things. Maybe that's just a bit too much to be spending $200 million dollars on.
You know? But maybe when we get the AI to make the movies, we'll be able to experience that.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're going to bring to it. Yeah, because there's the indie crowd. Those are the guys taking the risks, but then they're not at the top-level quality, of course. Yeah. They don't have the money.
Yeah,
but true. AI will change that. cool. Well, we've spoken a lot. I could talk for hours. Where can people find you and your company?
Yeah, so you could find me on Instagram, fmacmanus, fmacmanus. There's links to my company, Terraform Studios, there. You can also just search us on Google. My name is Finian MacManus. And Andrew, it was a pleasure to be on and have another great discussion with you.
Likewise, thank you.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was a fun time.
No problem. Thanks, man.
Of course. Thanks.